good morning. This is Dr. Anna Powell recording a test podcast for management of herpes in labor. So I am a generalist at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center with a clinical focus in reproductive infectious disease. And today we'll be talking about the management of herpes in pregnancy, particularly when the patient comes into labor and delivery. So let's start with a little bit of background information. 5 to 10% of women have a history of genital herpes, but 20 to 30% of pregnant women have antibodies to herpes type 2. So what that means is that a lot of patients, about half of, or I guess twice as many patients as have an active history of an outbreak of genital herpes, have had a prior exposure, meaning they've already had antibodies formed. Now, women lacking antibodies to herpes type 1 and 2 have about a 4% chance of acquiring herpes type 1 or 2 during pregnancy. Women with herpes 1 antibodies, but without type 2 antibodies, have a 2% chance of acquiring herpes type 2 during pregnancy. So there does appear to be a protective effect of already having been exposed to one to the other. Approximately 10% of herpes type 2 seronegative pregnant women have a partner who is herpes type 2 seropositive. Neonatal herpes is a significant but potentially avoidable cause of morbidity and mortality. Neonatal acquisition of herpes infection occurs in approximately 1 in 3,200 deliveries in the United States, most commonly at the time of labor. So intrapartum is about 85%, postnatally 10%, or in utero 5%. Risk factors for neonatal herpes include primary infection, herpes isolated from the cervix, infection with herpes type 1, invasive monitoring, meaning a scalp electrode, preterm delivery, the mode of delivery, meaning vaginal delivery in the setting of an active infection, and maternal age less than 21 years old. Cesarean delivery reduces the risk of herpetic transmission by 86% with an odds ratio of 0.14. The risk of transmission from mother to infant with a primary herpes outbreak is 20 to about 60% compared to 4% risk of transmission with a recurrence. As we'll discuss a little bit later, the recurrence should also be differentiated between a first non-primary outbreak. So we'll go through that in just a moment. A first episode of herpes during pregnancy is 33 times more likely to result in herpes transmission. So pretty significant. So a couple definitions for us to go forward. A first primary episode refers to a person without prior antibodies to type 1 or type 2 that acquires either virus in the genital tract. A first non-primary episode refers to a person who is seropositive for one or two, acquiring genital lesions of the other type. A recurrent episode refers to a herpes seropositive person experiencing genital lesions with the same herpes type. Herpes neonatal infection refers to herpes viral replication established in the absence of clinical illness, whereas herpes neonatal disease means that the viral replication is both present and producing this clinical illness. So how do we make a diagnosis of herpes? HSV PCR or viral culture are the preferred methods for detection of herpes from genital lesions. So this is taken from the CDC STD 2015 guidelines. And additionally, serology, particularly the type-specific IgG or glycoprotein G1 and G2, is recommended to assess the patient's serostatus. Sensitivities of this type-specific IgG varies from 80 to 98%, and the specificity is about 96%. The CDC guidelines do not recommend checking IgM because it can also be positive during recurrent episodes. Next, we'll go through the performance of the diagnostic tests. So regarding time to results, PCR may be available within a day. It depends on your lab capabilities, whereas viral culture takes about 2 to 5 days. Sensitivity. PCR sensitivity is reported to be 1.5 to 4 times as sensitive as viral culture. And there was a publication by Wald et al. That observed PCR was 3 to 11 times more likely to detect cervical, vulvar, and perianal lesions. The viral culture sensitivity depends on the stage of the lesion. With a primary infection, it can be as high as 80 to 90%. However, with a recurrence, it may be much lower, like 30%, because the amount of viral shedding is typically a lot less. Specificity for both tests is very high, with 99 to 100%. Limitations for PCR. There's not really any special limitation. However, with viral culture, negative culture may just reflect the lower viral shedding or quantity in the lesion, especially if the sample is collected outside of the prodromal or vesicular phase of the episode. So that's an important thing to keep in mind when you have a patient that has a resolving episode and you're thinking about viral culture. The other benefit of viral culture is if you are concerned that a patient may have resistant herpes or may not be responding to the antiviral therapy you have them on. In that setting, it may be helpful to collect a viral culture and get susceptibilities to acyclovir or valacyclovir or whatever you have them on. So for recommendations, so a mother presenting, patient presenting for delivery with an active genital lesion, based on available evidence in the literature, what I would recommend doing is determining whether that patient has any prior history of a herpetic outbreak or not. Collect a PCR and an IgG serology for type 1 and type 2 if they haven't previously been collected in the prenatal record. You need to do a sterile speculum examination to evaluate for vaginal or cervical lesions. And then, of course, labor should be avoided in the setting of any active genital herpetic lesions to reduce the risk of transmission. So in this setting, if you have an active lesion that is suspicious for herpes, meaning it's ulcerative and the patient had the prodromal symptoms, then a cesarean delivery would be recommended. If determination of the patient's serostatus can't be made in a timely fashion prior to delivery, managing the patient as if this was a primary infection is appropriate, and that comes from the Society of, I think the Canadian Obstetric Society guidelines. And then it's very important to alert the pediatrics team regarding the type of infection once you have the serologic information back as to whether it's a first primary, non-primary, or a recurrent episode. Now, if you're seeing this patient in the outpatient setting and they have a new genital lesion, you want to elicit the patient and their partner's herpes status to document it in the problem list, and then determine if they have any prior herpes history. So you ask and document the partner status also, and that's important because, as we mentioned earlier, a lot of patients have partners that potentially may have a history of herpes and may expose them while they're pregnant. Then for the actual lesion, you wanna collect the PCR and the type-specific serology. And then, you know, if this is a patient presenting earlier in her pregnancy course, no problem, you wait it out, let the lesions clear up. However, where we run into trouble sometimes is these patients are presenting at the end of the third trimester. So ideally, we want to avoid labor until all the active herpetic lesions have cleared. While there's no clear guidance on exact duration of latency before vaginal delivery is considered low risk, with a first episode, meaning a first primary episode, first time they ever have any signs of either type of herpes, the lesions may take up to 3 weeks, stay present up to 3 weeks, and the protective IgG antibodies may not be present until 4 to 6 weeks after the initial outbreak. Presumably with a recurrence, those antibodies are already there, they're generated much faster, but especially for a first primary, it's a big deal. When you're seeing a patient in the outpatient setting with a history of genital lesion, again, you want to give consideration to herpes prophylaxis with either acyclovir or valacyclovir to reduce the risk of herpes outbreak around the time of delivery. Speculum examination of the genital tract needs to be performed prior to labor onset to ensure no vaginal or cervical lesions are present. And that's also, I just want to make a quick note that even if you have a patient who has a planned cesarean delivery, if they have prodromal symptoms or they're concerned about a herpetic lesion, it's still important to do the speculum exam and document your findings for the pediatrics team, because they'll want to know, you know, what the risk of transmission is to the baby either way. Now, there is no clear data on the best duration of latency following a herpetic outbreak, as I mentioned, but there, in a study by Wald et al., in patients not taking antiviral therapy, genital shedding of type 2 herpes occurred more frequently in the 7 days before or after a symptomatic episode. So you may allow a patient to have a vaginal delivery if all of their active herpetic lesions have resolved. 7 days is reported in the literature, so I think that's a reasonable time frame. So after 7 days and all lesions have resolved, maybe they're a good candidate. But you need to have a discussion of the risks and benefits with the patient regarding the mode of delivery, and we need to be mindful to let the pediatrics or neonatology teams know what our thinking is so that everybody's on the same page. Now for patients, so sometimes we'll have patients presenting with PPROM, premature pre-labor ruptured membranes and an active genital lesion. So some background information for this. So there's limited literature based on case series and case reports to guide clinical decision-making in the setting of PPROM and an active herpetic lesion. There's not really any consensus on what gestational age where the risk of herpes infection outweighs the risk of prematurity regarding delivery. And expectant management may not be feasible in each case because these protective IgG antibodies, you know, can take 6 weeks or longer to develop. So if you've started acyclovir on a patient within 6 days of lesion onset, 6 to 7 days, let's say, shedding duration can be reduced from 9 days to 2 days, so it can dramatically decrease the amount of time that viral shedding occurs. Patients in the small case series and reports were treated with acyclovir and underwent cesarean section if lesions were present at time of delivery, with no cases of neonatal herpes reported. Risk of neonatal herpes in a patient with PPROM and development of recurrent lesions is 0 to 10%. So, you know, the concern is that because the protective barrier of the membrane is no longer there, that there may be an increased risk for transmission in that setting. But I think it also, you know, part of your thinking should focus on, is labor happening now, or, you know, at what point is labor occurring in the setting of this infection? So generally, when a patient's admitted with an active genital lesion in PPROM, you want to assess the risk benefit of prematurity versus potential risk of infection. The speculum exam still needs to be performed to make sure that no vaginal or cervical lesions are present. If labor is imminent and a herpetic lesion is present on the external genitalia or on the internal exam, at that point a cesarean delivery would be recommended. And then, you know, again, clinical judgment should be exercised here in the setting where the herpetic outbreak resolves, the patient is still PPROM'd, and then, you know, they labor at some point after the resolution of the infection. So, you know, again, you can use the 7 day sort of time point cutoff, but it would just really depend on the duration of latency, the onset of labor, and then your risk-benefit discussion with the patient. As we all know, so herpes treatment and suppression regimens, you can use acyclovir or valacyclovir. I will refer your attention to the ACOG practice bulletin number 82 for those specific regimens. And just remember, if you're not sure if a lesion is herpetic or not, use your clinical judgment, but it's not unreasonable to, you know, have that discussion with the patient. And you can always consult Dr. Powell or other colleagues from Reproductive Infectious Disease with any questions. Thank you so much.